Hi guys, Garodian here. Sorry I couldn't make this week's episode, and I'm particularly sorry because one of my favorite people, Louise Ní Chuilín, also known as Selkies, is on with Derek. Louise is a collaborator of mine. I know some of our listeners had asked for Peg Sayers masks in my little mask store, and ask and you shall receive. Louise is a wonderful artist and provided wonderful Peg artwork, so do check that out. However, if you do miss me and want to hear my voice, you can hear me in this week's bonus episode on Patreon that's just been released. And even more fun stuff, Brian left a bunch of off-air stuff that he usually cuts. So you can check that out and see some of the behind-the-curtain work that you normally don't hear. That sounds a bit like Brian didn't do his job, but he definitely did. So yeah, I really hope you enjoy the episode. Please check out our Patreon bonus episode and enjoy the show.
From That Stuff Podcast Network, welcome to Motherfucklore, a podcast of words. Irish. Irish words. And words from Ireland. I am Tara O'Shea.
And I'm Pater O'Crivonic.
And you're all very welcome to this week's episode. Pater, as you know, I do some work with a wonderful organization called the Irish Arts Centre.
I do know
in New York
that.
City.
I was aware of that, yeah. Yeah,
yes, indeed.
I'm not
I do
just
their work.
Because you told me.
Yeah, I work on their Word of the Week program, which is basically we look at an Irish word each week. So there's I've done different series, and one of the great things, so maybe I've done a series on Irish names, a series of words associated with mythology. We're going to be doing some more on words referring to items in nature in the future. But the great thing is that I get to collaborate with artists even.
I don't know artists. What that first word was. I know what an artiste or an artist
an artist.
An artist.
An artist. It's a word famously beginning with O. It's
artist.
Like artist.
Do artists, artists all take the dort?
Artists take the dort to
Cloyne.
No, I'm trying to think of another word over there.
Cloyne. Maybe if you're getting on the dart in the north side, or getting on the dart in Connolly, you might got the Cloyne.
Yes, indeed.
It's Cloyne, darling.
Cloyne. Oh yes. Either way.
Yeah. Sorry,
either
artists.
Way, it's been cool that I've been get to work with artists. So I take a word and to discuss its meaning, its context, and an artist illustrates based on this. So, and it's been great to work with some really interesting artists, really exciting young artists from Ireland, and some based here, some living abroad. One of those artists is our today's guest, Louise Ní Chuilín.
Gonna stay for the stay.
Hey. Fuck, good motherfucker, Louise.
Can't scare Louise.
Hello, Garmayot. How are you all doing? Sorry, I climbed over you there. I'm very eager.
That's good. That's the passion we need on the show.
Eagerness is what we like.
I'm ready to turn the show into personal propaganda.
Well,
wouldn't
be the first time.
Won't be the last.
So some of you who use social media, I never touch this stuff myself. Some of you who use social media might be familiar with Louise as Selkies on the Instagram and possibly even the Twitter.
If they're unlucky, they know me from Twitter. God bless them.
I think, does
terribly
anybody...
negative.
Yeah, does anybody want to be known for their Twitter character, their Twitter profile, the persona that they have on Twitter? Some people do. Really want that.
You've had John on before, haven't you?
John has
Mr.
John
Hyphen.
John Hyphen has a wonderful tendency to wind up people with strong opinions on things, and well, I just think it's very funny. This looks, I mean, obviously we, you know, nothing is more important than accuracy when you're studying a language and the history of a language and how one word leads to another. But some people, you know, some people are fighting that corner like the old crusader in The Last Crusade. You know, you have chosen poorly. It's like, hey guy, you know, galore comes from Irish. Oh, you've chosen poorly.
I think he just gets a dart and throws it at the dictionary and goes, right, yeah. What are we doing now? We're doing a banana in a carbonara. This word comes from Irish.
Oh yes, I think one of the his Belgian take on a coddle was just very
traditional Dublin coddle.
It started so well; it looked delicious, and then the pineapple turned up.
Yeah.
So you're on the right side of history then. You agree it looks delicious.
Well, he was browning the sausage and he was using very good quality kind of like French sausage in their saucisson.
So, Louise, you've wandered into a decades-long civil war at this stage. But, I mean, Derek has very strong opinions on coddle and at the time of recording has still not tasted the fucking thing.
I have.
No, you lie. You lie.
You have very shifty now. Describe the taste of a coddle.
Well, I enjoyed a version of a coddle.
Oh, no.
I'm all here. Oh, flag that. Here.
Yeah. It had lentils in it.
That's a dal. You ate dal.
This is a whole new battle in the coddle wars. I didn't think it was going this direction, but
It's like that old question, like, is a hot dog a sandwich? Is a dal a coddle?
Like, I'll take that, actually, now that I think about it. That's if a hot dog can be a sandwich, a dal can be a coddle. Yeah. Dal. Oh, we'll get John on the case. Irish.
Dal comes from Irish.
Yeah. Dal definitely comes from Irish. And obviously they removed the sausage at some point in its travel eastwards.
Because that wouldn't keep on the ships, you see.
Yeah, that's it. The undercooked sausages wouldn't keep on the ships. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they keep so well otherwise.
Yeah. the old widow's memories. It's important at this stage to throw in a disclaimer it doesn't come from Irish, and not everybody who says something on the internet or on a podcast means it to be taken as gospel. I mean, Darren does, obviously.
More accurately, the evidence has not yet been supplied for the fact that it does come from coddle.
It's only a working theory until that point.
Yeah, I think it's important to just to say, you know, that like research, I mean, the humanities research, it's never finished. Like our understanding of, like, say, the 1929 kind of Wall Street crash is already evolving rapidly in respect of things that have just happened in the past 2 or 3 years. And our understanding of the 1918 pandemic has changed dramatically. Like, people never talked about the Roaring Twenties in the context of the pandemic before until now. It's like, yeah, okay, now I get it. Now I want to go out and be a flapper or a dandy or a fop and do all those 1920s things because, yes, you need to relax after a pandemic.
You need to let loose. Further to that point, because research is always ongoing and developing, and knowledge is this kind of amorphic liquid thing, it's only a matter of time before we can claim every word as Irish. And we will. It's just a matter of time.
We'll do it. Like, yeah, we'll do it.
We definitely will.
We will find the evidence. And if not, we will create the evidence. Oh, no, Louise. I said the quiet part loud.
Louise, where are you based these days?
These days, I'm in Brussels in Belgium.
Oh, very nice.
I know it is.
So Belgium is, in many ways, a very underrated country. Great beer, great chocolate, great artistic stuff. Huh?
They do lace. Good lace.
Stunning lace.
Lace. Top quality lace.
Kerry does lace as well.
I've seen Kerry lace.
Well. Mm-hmm. Is it as good as Belgian lace?
I've seen it. I'll leave it at that.
That's diplomacy.
But our Belgium's nice.
So as an artist living in Brussels, and you've arrived in a city with a remarkable artistic tradition, specifically what the word comic doesn't really get it, but what they refer to there as bande dessinée.
Yeah, they do. They kind of reject the idea of a comic, not just because it's a different language, but I think that implies it always has to be funny or even like light-hearted. Whereas a lot, when you go into the shops over here now, and they're specific bande dessinée shops with only comics, you'll have a couple of like Japanese things in there. You'll have like probably a small number compared to the shops at home of the American gear. But the stuff from here, the stuff from the mainland is dark. Like there's a lot of concentration camp comics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people would go, Tintin or, the... What one were you talking about earlier? It was the...
Smurfs.
Lucky Luke and Smurfs. But I do remember reading the lad who wrote Asterix, René de Goscinny. I was always interested in him because he died the day I was born.
Ooh, reincarnation.
Yeah. Ooh, reincarnation. And what I found was he was his Jewishness is extremely important to him, and there are loads of coded messages about his own Jewishness in Asterix, including the color of Obelix's outfit being like the being kind of the pale blue and white stripes, and how that kind of the Gauls in his comic books are actually kind of a code reference for actually them for Jewish people and how they're treated in World War II in France. Wow. And in Europe at large.
I never knew that.
That's amazing. I loved Asterix. I read all the Asterixes. Read them all when I was a kid. Can you name the only Irish character in Asterix?
I can't. I'm just going to say straight up, I can't.
Is it going to be so horrendous?
No, actually, to be honest, it's a bit funny because you know how they do it. Like they, in the English, I only know the English version, obviously, but the names are all puns. So like the druid is called Getafix, and the blacksmith is called Vital Statistics, and the fishmonger is called Unhygienics. But in Asterix in Britain, he goes and he visits his cousin on the island of Britain. And there's visiting chieftains from Caledonia and Hibernia.
Oh.
And the one from Hibernia, the only Irish character in the whole of Asterix, his name is Overoptimistics. That's good. Oh, that's good. That's the English version. Obviously, it was written in French, so I don't know what it was in French, but it's like apostrophe for optimistics, which I thought was very, very clever.
It's great when you can actually, I suppose, when something is fit for translating, and they can make puns, and they can have the creativity, because so often things can be lost in translation.
Yeah, you love when we get a shout out as well.
Oh, yeah, I love looking for Irish people in anything. You know, they made a balls of that deliberately so with the Harry Potters, like, you know, because they had to, like, they said you're not allowed to translate certain names. But sure, your man Voldemort, his name has to be an anagram.
Yeah.
Like, so like, I am Lord Voldemort has to be an anagram of Tom Marvolo Riddle. So like, the fucker's middle name in French is Elvis. Just so that it could say, je suis Voldemort on the in the anagram. Like, so it's like, his name is Tom Elvis Riddle or something like that. So they, and then they said, yeah, you can't translate the names. You have to keep the proper names. That was when like Harry Potter became big money.
Film. Yeah.
Film.
When it was becoming a film.
Not so much a film, but more the theme park, and when Universal like sort of really monetized it.
Yeah, they started copywriting the English language words that were particular to Harry Potter.
Like fucking muggle and things.
Yeah, all that
things
shite.
Like that. And transphobia. But they... they haven't copyrighted that, unfortunately.
It's, you translate that, le transphobie.
But the thing about it is it kind of ruined it for a lot of translators, because when they started work on their series of Harry Potter, like with the first one, they were able to, that's a pun on such and such, so I'm going to change it, I'm going to make it that. And it's like, no, it has to be... The integrity of the entire series depends on this character being called Dolores Umbridge. Yeah. So you can't call her whatever the French word or the Portuguese word for Umbridge is.
Voldemort himself. It's like when that's used in English, it's like, ooh, this kind of foreign word that implies death or something scary. But in French, it's just literally escape from death. And they're like, oh, I wonder what this character's motivation is going to be.
What, you mean he didn't die? I'm shocked. I'm
he was kind of into not, you know, not that there was any hint of that beforehand.
Can we go back to these? What are they calling again? Bande dessinée?
Bande dessinée.
Bande dessinée.
What does that mean? Like well-designed or something like that?
Bond as in just a strip, just a band of frames lined up together.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's really good. So is it like, is it kind of like, they're not comics, ma'am. They're graphic novels.
Basically, well, there's a real, it's kind of the same thing over here as well. Like there's full books here. Non-visual media. There's a whole bookshelf beside me.
It's a beautiful bookshelf. It's a beautiful bookshelf. Yeah, unfortunately, our listeners can't see it.
It must be my low quality camera, because this is a Billy bookcase.
It's not your setup. For anybody who's obviously everybody except me and Derek, but for anybody who's not able to see Louise, she's set up like a BBC interview, as if she's got someone to impress. You know, like bookcase in the background.
Have I not?
half expecting kind of two children to be kind of bursting into the interview and someone to pull them out off screen.
I'm trying to get the cat to get in her walking frame and bounce over with little glasses on, but she's having none of it.
So these the bande dessinée tradition in France and Belgium is it's something that didn't quite happen the same way in Ireland or England, even though there is largely a Scottish tradition of comics in like the Beano and all. They're mostly Scottish, am I right, Bradder?
I don't know. They're definitely from yonder, from across the water. There were Scottish characters in it. Like, what was it?
Bass Street is the Bass Street Kids and Dennis the Menace. These are all very deliberately Scottish, aren't they?
I don't think Dennis the Menace is. Dennis is English, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, is his neighbour not Scottish?
All I know is that they had to change Dennis the Menace significantly in recent years, because like Dennis the Menace's shtick was picking on Walter the Softy. Which is essentially, and Walter is a sensitive boy who likes flowers and perfume. And like now they're trying to reflect a modern audience. So now Dennis really doesn't have a natural antagonist, because, you know, Dennis the Menace was a homophobic bully. But we were supposed to empathize with him for some reason. He's kind of like the classic anti-hero. But now,
reinvented Walter the Softy as a big evil Tory. I think he's called Jacob
now. Oh, is that
now?
What he is? Yeah, but sure, how is it going to be an anti-hero if he's taking on Tories? that was a Jacob Rees-Mogg joke. Sorry, I got that.
Boom, boom.
Got that way too late.
It's funny that the patron... I thought
that's very clever, like... Cause,
the
like,
patron Jacob saint Rees-Mogg. Of Glasgow is St. Mungo, and he's also the patron saint of bullied school children. And I think, what is it about Scotland? The bullying and your city are just intimately linked in your sainthood.
The patron saint of bullied children or the patron saint of bullying children?
Bullied children. St. Mungo is bullied by other children.
That's a departure for the church.
I don't know where to run with that one. Anyway, slight tangent.
I need to read about St. Mungo.
So but the big thing is, and that whereas, and this is comes into that Belgium has a long tradition of, I guess, of addressing multiple linguistic communities in everything it does and everything it publishes and everything it writes. It's right in there, and possibly if someone is learning Dutch or French for the first time, they have a huge resource of visually appealing first things to read.
That's it. And there's also there's just greater access as well over here, because something a bit similar to at home, everyone does the other national language in school. Now the Flemish have a much greater reputation for actually learning French than the French speakers do for learning Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not touching that with a 6-foot pole. I'm you not mean allowed to say that.
In a 2-meter pole.
Oh god. I'm getting bullied for the wrong metric systems as well.
Oh god, they do love a bit of metric system over there. I mean, like I think metric systems is great for kilometers and driving distances. But if someone says, "Oh, he was 2 meters tall, and he weighed a bit,"
absolutely nothing, absolutely. Yeah.
And he weighed 300 kilos, and he attacked me. And I have no idea what this guy looks like.
I don't.
That
know
could have been a toddler, do you know.
Yeah. So, we were at the literary tradition of comic books still. Where we? No, we were on to language learning. Yeah, sorry.
Language learning, yes. So,
but it is a case of people have, at the very least, a smattering of the other languages. And now a huge amount of people here would have English as well. Particularly people, you know, kind of my age, which is very handy for me, I have to say, given that I've heard horrendous Dublin accent in French, which is nice.
So it's... I remember meeting a Belgian on holidays and I asked him, you know, like how he was talking about his teenage daughter, and I said, "But can you just tell me like how many languages your daughter speaks?" He said, "Oh, it's 5." And I just, you know,
yeah.
And this is just, you know, this is just normal. And I said, "Is she, you know, an especially bright girl?" He goes, "No."
Proud of it as well.
See, say that. No, she's thick as 2 shot blank. It does. Look, it goes to show multilingualism is not weird. It is the norm in most countries. It's just that we happen to live in an Anglosphere world where we have these strange beliefs that if you learn an additional language, you might lose the ability to boil an egg or drive a car or something. That there's only our tiny little potato brains can only handle so many distinct subjects. And
they're also less precious about like fluency as well, which is nice to be around because you can throw in, because everyone has like a certain degree of mutual understanding, you can throw in, like my fella's mother, for example, they're all Dutch speakers, but she will say Frezeke for strawberry, which is not the Dutch word. No one bleeding uses that word, but everyone knows what she's talking about, rather than her say the Dutch word, which I think is aardbeien. Perfect accent there, by the way. Yes, or well.
Aardbeien.
Well, it's the same in German, Erdbeeren. It means, if I'm not mistaken, it means berry of the earth.
Oh, I love that.
Like an aardvark, except with a berry instead of a vark.
Pretty much, yeah. Why not?
Obviously inferior.
Aardvark meaning what?
Darren.
Pardon?
What's vark?
Vark is a pig, yeah?
Okay, yeah, so it's like a ground pig. Okay, that makes sense. That's Afrikaans, though, isn't it? That's not Dutch.
I think, yeah, it's Afrikaans, Dutch, isn't some a Dutchman. A Dutchman saw the lad, that little aardvark running around, and says, hey, look at your man. Look at your man. Look at his belly.
He turned to his mate and went, that's you.
Just as an aside, I'm a that's you, that is. I'm a huge fan of naming conventions for animals that you see if you try and relate them back to an animal that you already know. Which is why, like, there are alternative names for almost every animal in Irish that involve, like, it being either some form of dog or cat or horse. Like, the Irish for hippo is Dovrach. Dovrach. It's a water horse.
Perfect.
The Irish for otter is Dovrachu, which is a water dog. And I don't know, is there a Dovrachat? It might be catfish, who knows? But, I mean, there probably is. A pine marten is a cat crown. Tree cat. Perfect. So I like that. Ground pig.
What more could you want? Because everything really is, if it's not a type of dog, a type of cat, a type of horse, was it? A coddle.
Coddle.
Yeah.
It's either a type of horse, a type of dog, a type of cat, or you can boil it. And that's how we do it. My tiny little potato brain can't take on any more terminology.
A porpoise is a sea pig, isn't it?
Muckmara, yeah.
Muckmara, classic. They're gas lads when you're out in a boat and they're popping up and saying, "Oh, how's it going?" But yeah, porpoises are mad altogether.
They seem like dolphins that aren't up themselves, do you know?
They're kind of like if dolphins were doves, porpoises would be seagulls.
Or would they be gicknas?
Gicknas?
A gicna is like an unashamed street pigeon. Wrong number of legs, wrong number of wings, extra eyeballs hanging out the front.
That's I don't think I've ever seen one of those boys.
Oh, you have. You have. They're the ones that walk like dubs.
Dubs famously just leave their kids on Parnell Square.
That's
and
it,
have
yeah.
them copy the birds.
Copy the pigeons.
I've Get never this. Seen a baby pigeon, but I have seen baby dubs walking like pigeons.
It's much the same thing. Baldy, funny looking.
Make weird noises.
Squawking, yeah, yeah. That's it.
Squawking six everywhere. In a row.
Scabby little knees. Yeah.
They rob your chips.
Oh, they are the worst.
I miss home when you say that.
Like I was once, there was a sunny day and I was wearing a brand new shirt and I was eating an ice cream. And I was just talking to Aaron and a seagull shat on me, got some on my new shirt, some on my ice cream and some in my mouth. And I'm fairly sure I heard it say, fuck you, as it flew off. Oh,
that was, and it, the worst tragedy about that, Louise, was he had to throw away nearly half his ice cream.
Oh, that's a real Calvin man joke, isn't it? Free toppings.
That's...
This is how it's always been.
Double Love is a podcast in which we explore the strange and terrifying world of Sweet Valley High book by book. Join me, Anna Carey.
And me, Karen Moynihan.
as we revisit one of the maddest series of books ever written. Or ghostwritten.
If you ever read about the perfect blonde Wakefield twins, Elizabeth and Jessica, with their eyes the colour of the Pacific Ocean, then you might enjoy listening to us absolutely tearing them to shreds. Affectionately, of course.
But of course. And even if you didn't, there's still plenty of drama, kidnappings, stolen boyfriends, and seemingly mandatory school dances to entertain you.
Find us on the Headstuff Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts.
Louise, in addition to that, you want to talk a little bit about your work when we were collaborating with the Irish Arts Centre. We were talking about words from mythology.
Oh, we should stay on topic. You're right.
Yes. remember topic.
Do you know how we're not just Skype and we're not doing book club at the moment?
Mm-hmm.
We did. We had a lovely time. I had a lovely time. I don't know about you, actually.
I thought it was fantastic.
It was really nice. And the Irish Arts Centre in New York, lovely crowd. They... kind of what the girls were saying to me was, this is like a back to your roots, new interpretations of old stories and kind of new visualizations of notions that have always been around. Like, I think was Amy Louise did the Banshee.
Amy Louise did the Bon Onoch, the ghosts that haunt battlefields, that kind of like an Irish Valkyrie.
Her stuff was gorgeous, I have to say. Her stuff in general.
Is it Bononoch a Valkyrie, or is it more of a Revenant?
It's somewhere in between. It's similar but different, as in there's Bononoch and Bokonoch, and they both kind of haunt, and they both fill the skies before a battlefield. Amazing. And Gintly Ginny.
That's class.
And you get to project whatever kind of motives on it that you want. So there's some people who are like, oh, they're here to oversee, or they're here to harvest, or they're here to just enjoy a bit of chaos.
The gang in Queens, I asked them, and the Irish department who run the Dictionary of Irish Language account, and I said, just so I don't stick my neck out and get knocked off, Bononoch and Bokonoch, that they're not good and evil, like, first, it's not like one's white because it's good and one's goaty because it's bits of the devil. No, they're both bad. They're both bad. Don't be telling people one's, don't be... So I said, fair enough, I won't do a Johnny Hyphen on it all. I will be as close to the facts as I can.
He'll be delighted now to hear that do a John Hyphen is it?
Intentionally troll academics and purists.
To not invent your own mythology when Irish mythology is dark, though.
I mean, that's wild. Like,
every single supernatural being that exists in the Irish sort of corpus is like, it's out to get you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the very nicest of them are just the ones that you can't take your eye off for a second because they're actually out to get you.
Have you seen that little book? It's called The Field Guide to Irish Fairies. And it's packaged as this lovely little, you know, it's like a reference book for little kids. And you open it and it's like, this little man comes in your house and tries to kill you. And you have to carve a cross into your butter. Don't take your eye off the baby because it's trying to eat it. Or replace it with a piece of wood.
The Shifra scares the shit out of me. The idea of the Shifra, like the changeling. And it's such a beautiful name. Like, I know some lovely, lovely people called Shifra, and they're absolutely lovely. But the idea of an actual Shifra, that they'll come in and they'll change your baby with a baby that's much more intelligent and talented. It's like, horrifying.
I think I get this now. It's because when you have a child, and this was for white people, when they have a child and the child is born with blue eyes, and then one day the kid has brown eyes, and I was like, what the fuck happened? And I think now, from having a kid and seeing how kids can change very quickly, and particularly if you were away, off, you know, fighting the tans or something, and you came back, I mean, in those 2 or 3 weeks, your child could have grown dramatically, their hair changed color, their eyes changed color. And it's a thing where you have a little kind of a toe-headed brat with kind of blonde hair and blue eyes, and then a few weeks later they go to they've kind of chestnut brown hair and brown eyes. I mean, it happens very quickly, and if you're not there every day, and the whole idea of dads being there every day is fairly recent and still not compulsory, apparently.
That's very loaded.
Let them know. Go on.
Jealous of all those dads who are not there every day, are you?
I'm not jealous. They're jealous of me if they knew what they're missing. Having children is fantastic. If you want to. If you don't, don't. But anyway, one of the words that you illustrated, Louise, was related to the story of Melchorca. Stroy, which is not very well known in Ireland, but is a massive part of, is an Irish character in Icelandic mythology.
Again, love it when we get a shout out. Love that. But it's funny, you would like, it's such a good story that you would think, along with, you know, just along with the children of Lear, that that would just be everywhere, particularly when we're so founded on this idea of, you know, we pack off so many of our own and they do so well abroad and they come back and we like to brag about them. It's, you would think that would knit in perfectly with like our national psyche, but we don't we don't really have it. I hadn't heard it until I was illustrating it.
That's the thing, and I was it came up in my research before, and I was like, well, how come more people don't know this? Because anytime apparently when people Irish people do go to Iceland, they're always asked about this. The same way when Irish people go to Germany, they're asked about the Kelly family. I ain't gonna peep in my bed tonight.
I was in the shop, and it's an old man thing. We just let him do it, and he eventually winds down. But I think it's best to just pass on to the next sentence.
Just don't make eye contact.
Don't make eye contact. Look at the ground. The Kelly family were a band that did really, really well in Europe and did not do very well in Ireland.
Are they like the Nolan sisters?
Kinda, but different.
we'll discuss it another time. But anyway, the important thing is, yes, Paddy, you were saying.
Oh yeah, I went into a shop in Munich once, and the guy overheard all of our accents, and he was like, "Sind Sie Britannien?" It's like 999 Irish. And he goes, "Oh, Ireland, Rory Gallagher."
Yes. I was like,
nice, oh, classic. Nice. That's one. A good reference. Man.
Yeah.
Finally, a good one.
Because I was in Argentina many, many years ago, and a guy was saying, oh, like, I was talking to a fellow there, we were renting some bikes, and he goes, oh, Ireland, you know, De La Raza Riordan? I said, I beg your pardon? He goes, De La Raza Riordan. Oh! And he goes,
fantastic.
And he says, for me, she is a shooting star in the sky.
Oh,
that's gorgeous.
Aww. I love that. Andy's very right.
Mm-hmm. Very right. Absolutely.
De La Raza Riordan is one of my favourites.
So even the name is musical. I hope that's how we pronounce it now from now on.
De La Raza Riordan. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for it.
So what was the story? It was the Melkorka. That's the one from the Icelandic sagas.
Yes, she was an Irish princess who was kidnapped by some mean Icelanders, and she just decided she was never going to speak to them.
Ah, and so then, she didn't speak at all.
But she spoke Irish to her son. She has a son over
in
there.
In secret as well, which in is secret. Interesting.
And then she spoke Irish to her son, and he was speaking of Icelandic with his mean dad. But then when he went off as a tradesman, and a bunch of Irish, they got in a battle with a bunch of Irish soldiers, and he was able to speak Irish to them and negotiate a peace treaty and a trade deal. And then he found out, he was introduced to his Irish grandfather, and he was given the ring to show that he was inheriting the kingdom.
Ah.
Like, we have That's to class. Co-op this for the Gaeilge Sawalha crowd. Do you know what I mean? If your community isn't getting a Gael skull, but here you go.
Can you be as vindictive as a Scandinavian warrior queen?
Yeah. Something to aim for.
Just don't speak to anyone except your kids. That's
famously
really
healthy.
Yeah, very much.
The Lannamabrock, I think, is that's their the legend is called.
Yeah.
But I remember that was. I know there was, when my mom was growing up in Cork, there were some families on the road where the dad would only speak Irish and the mother would only speak English to their children. The children had this, you know, had an odd experience.
That's kind of what I had. To a certain degree, or up to a certain age, my dad really spoke Irish with us and specifically would do it like in Duns because he knew it would piss people off, which it did. Yeah. Me and my sister got awful flack once of somebody came up to us in the bread aisle, no less, wanting to know why we were talking about other people, why we were like total projection, and we were kids. I'd say she was probably just about walking as well.
Man,
she toddled up to you and said, why are you talking about me behind my back?
How dare you? And the small one.
You're talking Irish. They assumed that, like, I mean, yeah, you're a child. It's one thing when, you know, I mean, the whole, I suppose, it's often presented as a kind of an endearing thing, the idea of people speaking Irish when they're checking out, whoever checking out people they fancy when they're teenagers on holiday or something.
Well, there was that ad. Do you remember?
There's
fantastic ad.
Oh, the dad when they're talking Irish, the two young ones are talking Irish, and then the guy also speaks Irish.
I think about that constantly. I can still hear the exact cadence in my head of your one going, what?
No, be Donna.
Yes. Ah.
But that, like, it's so projection. Like, as you said, it's just it's unbelievable. Like, this, it all sort of speaks to this idea that Irish couldn't possibly be communication. It can be anything else. It can be decoration. It can be
performance.
It can be cryptography. It can be like the whole works. But it couldn't possibly just be communication, could it? Like, it's pisses me right off. Why are you talking about me behind my back? Because you're a little fucking Gicna. Get out.
Hey, we won't go against Gicnas now. They're a noble breed.
Noble breed of flying rat.
They don't deserve that.
Another word which you illustrated as part of the series we did was Riestrad.
Yes! Yes!
A cracking word. A cracking word, to be fair.
And I get, we have to bring it back. It's another thing. I have to keep it in the wallet to just whip it out. Do you know when you have a really bad sneezing fit?
Mm-hmm.
Or when you get just like a little bit of spit goes the wrong way and you really have to cough it up.
It's funny because I suppose when you see how kind of the, some people, like I suppose sometimes you see Riestrad. I love the way you interpreted it because you got right down to the root of the Cuchulainn's name, meaning, and those two things. And then sometimes in some of the texts you see, oh yeah, he like turned into a big flat kind of four-legged monster with a tube of blood squirting out of his head and, you know, fire shooting out of some hole. And it's like, yeah, let's find something we can all work with.
Yeah. Do you know what it is? It reminded me of the, do you know, like these medieval depictions of angels as described in the Bible, which is just a big mess of eyeballs and a tail attached on
Nobody
fire
wants that.
In the sky. That's it. Few wings.
Angels are horrifying. The way they're described, like in the Christian mythology, it's absolutely horrifying. Like, imagine a wheel, but made out of eyes and on fire all the time, and it sings.
And sometimes, like, legs for no, yeah. But flying.
But like, imagine you're a painter, Raphael Sanzio, sitting there going like, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a handsome white guy with some fucking wings. Because that's just, I know how to draw that.
Yeah, he's looking at his notes going, geez, I have to find a reference now for, or I can call my boyfriend in from the front room, have him put on a little she, and everyone's happy. Everyone knows Mick is handsome. They all want to see me paint him.
I think the worst job in Renaissance art was the guy who had to paint kind of white robes over nudie bits because the church was there saying, more robe.
Didn't they have to put on temporary like bits of, not quite stone, but obviously like drape stuff over all the Mickeys on the statues and things like that?
Little plaster fig leaves.
Plaster fig leaves, that was it, yeah. They didn't have a song.
God forbid, yeah, because who knows what was going to happen there, but it was a hell of a thing. They were patrons of the arts, Pater, patrons of the arts.
Yeah.
In addition, Louise, to your work with the Irish Arts Centre, even, and your work with Block, which we're going to, we will come back to. I do want to have to get on to something very important. You collaborate with one of our regular motherfucker co-hosts, our dear friend, Gara Jean McAvoy.
Yes.
You have worked on her mask project, Pullen.
And I'm also, I'm chairperson of the Gara Jean fan club. I just want to confirm that. She's unreal.
She certainly is.
But yeah, we've now bonded over being massive peg apologists. And so I've, not that she's had to apologise for, obviously. Mm-hmm.
But this is the thing, because you were one of course, last year's glops, glamorous ladies of peg.
You said you weren't going to use that.
I'm sure Brian will cut it out.
We're making glop a thing.
Basically, like last year.
I'm not going to be able to cut it out if I put it in every sentence.
Can we put it to the Cardi B version? No, never mind. Moving on.
Oh, yeah. You're thinking like glop. That's completely different. Yeah, so last year on our peg episode, we ended with a montage of Irish women talking about what peg meant to them, including yourself. And it was a huge success. And thank you very much for contributing to that.
Yeah, it was class.
Thank you for including just me enjoying being a horrible, horrible contrarian and just liking upsetting people. But do you want the nice things?
That's the entire reason we speak Irish.
Oh yeah,
just
to upset people and
in
to in Duns in the bread aisle.
Is he? It's all because it's all because a certain radio station exists and we just want to give them content.
Personally, I do it for the grant that I get directly into my bank account every week. Yeah. I don't know how much yous are on, but I actually get extra for being out foreign. And speaking the made-up language that Dev gave us.
Unfortunately, I drew the other side of the coin. I'm a impoverished, bog-trotting, potato-munching Irish speaker. So, the flip side of Schrodinger's Grelgor.
So you don't get to get the Arts Council grant then? If you make up a few little songs or something, they'll give you something. Well, so they tell me on Twitter.
Yeah, apparently so, yeah. But sure, as you say, we don't even speak a real language. It was all put together by Dev in the 1930s.
It's all an excuse.
I'm the guy who had the stop sign taken down at that dangerous road because it didn't say start in the equal sign size.
Madness.
See, stop and stop. They're just, it's not the same thing, do you know? No. We're nothing if not pedants.
But that's, and yes, so anyway, your love of Peg and contrariness led to the Peg themed mask range.
Yes, so I drew up fun, happy, smiling Peg, and there's a company, a crowd called Spoonflower, that we were able to send off to. They printed up the material, sent it back to Garrodine, and she ran up these gorgeous masks. They're pink, they're real kind of mean girls vibe, which I feel like people are going to hate.
I loved them. I missed it. I took a digital detox, and by the time I got back online, I only took a few hours off. When I got back online, the shagging things were sold out.
But if there is another one,
I know. That's what you were saying to me earlier. The secret is never to log off.
There's another drop on Saturday, I think, and there's more Dolly Parton ones.
Well, that's good, because this episode's dropping on Friday. So if you're listening now, do check in the link in our show notes, where you can check out and get yourself a Dolly or a Peg mask, because, that shit is good. It's the good stuff.
You too
and
can be a
And it's not the only Peg merch.
Oh.
Well, no, I do have one little print in my print shop, but it's not as cool as the masks, I have to say.
Get
the masks have
just
little
to be
pipes on them.
Listen, the pandemic won't last forever, so get yourself a Peg print while you're at it, just to be on the safe side.
Absolutely. Her wise and reassuring stern face will remind you not to do that thing you're about to do.
Don't be starting fights on social media. That's what's in her eyes.
Absolutely. It's never the slam dunk situation you think it's going to be.
Not once. Not even once is it that.
You never get this. Yeah, you think it's going to be this Jackie Chan, eight losers knocked out on the floor, and you're standing there flexing your muscles, kissing the old biceps, tickets to the gun show. Never.
You're just left with a bowl of coddle with pineapple in it.
Yeah.
They do a reverse image search on your picture and find your LinkedIn, find out where you work, and send screen grabs to your boss.
Yeah.
Your mom will get a horrible postcard.
Yeah. They're just awful. Just the people on the internet. Except for you, who are listening to this right now. I love you.
The only exemption.
Definitely.
The only exemption is you, the listener.
Before we wrap up, Louise, we'd love to ask all our guests what their favourite Irish word is.
Oh, I'm not prepared. Oh.
While you think about that, do you want to tell us a bit about your work with Block?
Oh, sorry. Yes. So Block came to me a little while ago talking about kind of moving towards this new platform for young hip happening people like myself. The people who start fights on Twitter, maybe about coddle, maybe about actual fun, nice things. And a lot of it is just about the fact that we do deserve and need and want silly content as well. They work a lot with creators. There's people doing reviews of video games and stuff. And it's just to put stuff out there that you can engage with online. The same kind of silly memes you would be liking from any other page as well, which I think is really fun. And you miss, I think, when you want a sale of Skylge, you do miss the silly things as well. We have all the serious books and we have lovely music and stuff, but sometimes you just want a bit of shitposting as well. So they're great for that.
They're brilliant. I love Block because the content is accessible to learners, but it's not for learners. It's it's general content. Like you say, it's shitposting, it's memes, it's bants. There's an awful lot of fun happening. There's some hilarious stuff. Hilarious, hilarious stuff on Pluck.
Some awful puns, which is what I live for. Michael Fry is doing some stuff as well that, like, I've post notifications set on for it. And when I know it's him, I'm like, oh, drop everything.
Yeah. He was on Blyra on Onion Evregelon show on RNG a couple of weeks ago. And he's class. It was deadly.
He's so good.
He's hilarious. He's a great guy.
Yeah, Michael Fry is doing some great work.
It's not even his real name, but we love him all the same.
I think, yeah, the Michael thing, he's worked at it, you know, the Michael surname business. It's he knows exactly what he's doing. So.
You should have done that. Welcome to Mother Folklore with me, Derek Mother Folklore.
You know? I should have, but I gave away my real name too early. Within 3 months of setting up the Irish Four, there was an article in the Daily Edge about me, so there was a that was probably the time when I should have said picked a fake name, but picked I did not.
Name then. Ah, well, a nom de plume. I know. Should look it.
But the Humans of Shop Street is your outlet for that.
I'll never get over the fact that, you know, I mean, like, I, of all the actual commotion, I guess, I've been involved in on the internet, the most hatred for the actual account, not based on a reaction to kind of a quarrel. Some people really hated Humans of Shop Street. Some Galway people took it very personally.
That's Galway for you, man.
That's Galway for you.
I mean, like,
he's not even from here, like.
He nearly threw his unicycle at me, like.
Juggling very aggressively in my direction.
It's like any guy who can tell the difference between where we're Blue Ghost and Van Vliet, like Hemsativa, and like, yeah, you don't want to mess with those guys.
Now, they keep all their angst in the puddles in the bottom of their brown bootcut cords. That's a lot of angst. Do you know? You don't want to go up against that.
There was a Humans of Shop Street character, and we'll call him Sean Patney Quigley. And I think he had a magic carpet in his flat that only worked when it was clean. So it had never flown anywhere. And the responses I got to that was, who the fuck do you think you are? Cork students are much dirtier than us. And
I love how it's all a scale. Like, it's all a scale. Like, how dare you? And it's, you can't comment about one thing on the internet without commenting about all the things. Like, oh, it's funny that you're saying nothing about Cork, isn't it? Huh?
That's the beautiful thing about being from Dublin, is that everyone hates us, which I find just so energising. Do you know, it's really lovely to know that, number one, we will make it to the All-Ireland final. Mm-hmm. And number two, everyone will be on the side of whoever we're up against with this Raistred fury passion. Like,
if Dublin was up against there's some other counties there that people don't like, and if they were up against us, they'd still say, you know what, we're gonna turn a blind eye to that hated county.
Just, you know, this once, Roscommon, is fine.
It's just, absolutely.
You went there. No, I like Roscommon. It's some beautiful countryside, French Park.
Oh, it's not the countryside that I have an issue with. Beautiful landscape. Roscommon has other issues. I'm just trying to make enemies.
Louise, what would be...
Louise gets up extra early in the morning so that she can make more enemies.
So I can choose violence a couple of times throughout the day.
What would be your favourite Irish word? Have you thought of one now?
I'm going to cheat a bit, and I'm going to choose a phrase that I have robbed off a girl I used to work with. Her name is Orla. She's a very nice girl. But when she was a bit, you know, surprised, or when she was shocked, it was, oh, we're on a guinial, which I think is fantastic. Not just Holy Mary, Mother of God, but Mary of Candles.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
I have never heard that. That's brilliant. That's right up there with that. I love those expressions of surprise, like a ye in the rost, and
you know, so good. Like, yeah. My granny has a very dramatic friend who had great ones in English, and I think my favourite is, oh, Lazarus alive. It's so good. It's the choice of characters from the Bible, spot on.
My aunt's favourite is Judas tonight.
Ooh,
which I have never understood, but I really appreciate.
She's definitely done her own little remix there. I like that.
Judas tonight.
I heard this out loud and he used to say, I swear by the risen Christ. And not swear by Christ, I swear by the risen Christ.
That's impactful.
And I found myself using it without realizing how strange it was to other people. And I just liked it because I thought it was strange. I swear by the risen Christ.
That's like turbocharged Jesus. Mm-hmm. Like that's really gone for it.
So, yeah, because after getting out of the cave, he was, you know, like, you know, he was taken prisoner. No one was expecting him. Yeah, he's
Chuck Norrison.
Taking names, exactly. Chuck Norris mode.
I'm glad we could get this extra bit of blasphemy in this week.
It's a nice note to end things on.
Yeah. I think so. It's a nice note to end, you know, like just, you know, look at the grey sky ahead. Could be a lightning bolt up there with my name on it.
Did we get rid of blasphemy a few years ago? I think we did. Did we pass that referendum, didn't we?
Hope so.
We did. But here's the thing, and we'll probably end on this note. That referendum got 35% of the voters who bothered to turn up without any campaigning. And a lot of political parties in Ireland would fucking bite the arm off you for 35%. Of voters who turned up.
Wait, what? Like, so 35% of people voted in favour of keeping the blasphemy laws?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but it was very low turnout, wasn't it?
Low turnout doesn't matter. People who don't bother to turn up, they're effectively saying, yeah, we accept the outcome. And fact is, general elections have low turnouts all the time, but
43.8% turnout, yeah.
But it's like, it is what it is, man.
That's more than I would have thought. For something people don't really care about,
because it was the same day as the presidential re-election, which I think wasn't a great election. But I think the fact is, if you can, you have a 10% turnout, the result still stands.
Yeah, but like the thing is, right, I wouldn't look too much into people voting to keep blasphemy laws. At the end of the day, sometimes you just want to give the sitting government a kicking, so you vote no in whatever bullshit referendum is in front of you. It's why we didn't get baby president. Remember baby president? They wanted to lower the presidential age from 35 to 21.
Yeah, but I think the reason there, I think most people realise that, yes, a young person could do the job, that they didn't want a baby ex-president. They didn't want a 29-year-old former president going to gap year in Australia, getting in a fight in a bar.
I really wouldn't want that. You'd have to sign up to just go into a tank or something like that, like when you're finished. Okay, mm-hmm. Sure, you can be president at the age of 21, no problem. Whatever YouTuber decides to win in a landslide. But you have to go into this vat when you're finished. And we're just going to keep you in there until you're a respectable age.
You don't want someone having a long post-presidential career, really.
No. Ideally, short as possible, like, you know.
No, but sort of like, that's what the Rose of Tralee is for. That's what you can do young, and then you'll wait to be president.
Well, who knows? We may have our first president stroke rose hybrid ever in a couple of years.
No.
I remember Tamaguchis.
Oh, God.
Do you remember things?
Do you remember
Discmans?
Do you remember the dream of one day owning a house?
I don't.
No.
But here, at the end there, with our blasphemy, we fell into the pit then of... why doesn't Irish have secular words for things?
I think by following blasphemy, but with a terrifying prediction of the future, I think I may have. We're going to done up. So, anyway, Louise, where can people find out your work? Where can people buy your prints and get your stuff?
Well, you can buy the prints on selkiestudio.com. I'm on Instagram as selkies with a little underscore afterwards, and selkies with an underscore as well on Twitter, but you don't want to see my opinions there. I'm not nice.
Louise Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Slán, lads.
And until next time, it's Slán from me.
Agus Slán Wimshe.
Thank you so much. What a great episode. Thank you so much to Louise for joining us. Motherfucker comes out every Friday in the Hesitant Podcast Network. You can contact the show in the WhatsApp number in our show notes. Send us a message. We might even include it in an episode.
Thanks, as always, to Brian for producing and to Kirsten Scheel for the amazing artwork.
And thanks to all the team at Headstuff for keeping the show alive. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Slán.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Without Yahoo Answers, how will I know? Am I pregnant? Am I pregnant?
Pregnant? The trick is just never log off.